Spinner versus the United States Forest Service. Mr. Lerner.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
This case involves the defendant's violation of the cumulative impact statement requirement of the National Environmental Policy Act. The cumulative impact standard requirement provides the agency must consider all past, present, and reasonably foreseeable future actions in looking at timber sales and other actions that are in a reasonable geographic boundary. This case involves two timber sales.
Well, could we start actually with the question whether you exhausted this claim properly before the Forest Service?
Yes, we did, Your Honor, and at page 4 of the district court's opinion, the district court finds that plaintiffs exhausted their administrative remedies. The district court so found, and
why
we
is
did.
That binding on us?
Your Honor, it's not binding on you. Of course, you could review the district court's factual finding on whether we exhausted or not, but the fact of the matter is that we did. We extensively engaged in the administrative proceedings before the Forest Service, filed extensive legal, technical, scientific comments. The difficulty here is that we don't have discovery. The Forest Service controls the information and the timing. As soon as they released the information that they were going forward with the Twin Ghost timber sale, we immediately asked that it be incorporated into the 20-mile environmental impact statement process. We argued it extensively before the district court. We submitted supplemental briefs.
Right.
The issue was not raised below as to our exhaustion or not. We didn't, and the district court so found at page 4. This is a collateral attack that comes before the appellate court,
well,
and it gets into the County of McHenry cases that Judge Flom wrote a couple
sure.
years ago.
Let me explain why this is of a concern, because actually in my mind it's very closely related to the whole meaning of this term reasonably foreseeable future effects. However you want to characterize it, it appears that the planning, that the thinking about the Twin Ghost area was in a much more preliminary stage at the time the record of decision is issued for your case. And indeed, you don't find out until rather late in the day that Twin Ghost might be subject to one of these management plans or whatever you want to call it yourself. So at that point, you do try to introduce it, as I see,
that's correct,
as I understand this record, into the case. But in some ways, I then look back and I think, well, was this actually formed enough? Was this reasonably foreseeable enough? Was this crystallized enough to require its inclusion as one of the cumulative impacts here? The district court came to the conclusion that it was just too inchoate and that this one email was really just not enough to pile all this consequence on that you want. And in fact, if they ever go ahead with Twin Ghost, they'll have to count the 20-mile area in as a cumulative impact. So why is that wrong? There's a question of judgment here about how crystallized or how coate or however you want to say it something needs to be.
I appreciate your question, Your Honor. Let me see if I might break that down. First part of it is, did we exhaust? And on that we did, the district court so found. Your question then is, it's tied to reasonably foreseeable. We couldn't exhaust and do something about something where they weren't providing the information.
And that maybe it wasn't even that well thought out. They were just taking some very preliminary measurements.
And I understand your question there. That's different, though, than exhaustion.
Yeah,
so
I
going,
agree with that.
So
going related, to the, but it's a little different, yes.
Well, we can only exhaust what they inform us about.
So
your
can't
question
exhaust
goes
something they're going to do next year either. I mean, I'm worried under your system that the Forest Service can actually never do anything because there's always going to be some new program that's coming along.
But let's look to the facts here. First of all, this isn't something. This is a timber sale that is immediately next door. This
but is it a planned timber sale?
Well, it's a planned, but within the scope of the parade of horribles you're sort of constructing, of how far would this go? Well, the facts here are relevant. First fact, in 2005, and this is not disputed, the NEPA coordinator for the Forest Service, Mr. Brian Quinn, raised a red flag.
But his red flag, if you're talking about that email, the email has this list of about 13 projects, and then there's a sentence at the end of it where he says, and oh, by the way, you know, at some point, Twin Ghost is going to have to be worked in. He doesn't say in this ROD, he doesn't say anything.
And if we had discovery here, we would have been able to tease that out. We're stuck with it as is. The fact is, this wasn't an intern, it wasn't just somebody. It was the NEPA coordinator who raised a red flag and said, this is a big timber sale. They're both under the same forest management plan. It is immediately next door.
He doesn't say it's a timber sale, as I recall.
Yes, he does. He refers to it. This is referred to as being a timber sale. And everybody knew this was a timber sale. They were both within the forest management plan.
I don't think he says it is a timber sale. He says there are two additional projects and identifies the Twin Ghost as one of them and says it's likely to be initiated under the timber pipeline.
The timber pipeline means a timber sale. I took that a little bit, but when he says Twin Ghost, which is under the same forest management plan, is in the timber pipeline.
Likely to be.
And as we'd explain at pages 11 to 13 of our reply brief, the Forest Service in 2005 then began on-the-ground activities. They began to do site surveys. They began
to
look at...
That's all they're doing. That's the whole point. They're just surveying the site. They don't know what they're going to do. They haven't decided whether there's going to be, you know, two trees cut down or some massive timber project. It's very hard to imagine a useful EIS saying, you know, here are 75 different possibilities we might speculate about.
Your Honor, but that's what the NEPA implementing regulations require.
I don't think so. They require reasonably foreseeable. Okay. So built into that has to be some judgment, it seems to me, about how speculative or non-speculative something is.
Your Honor, and if you conclude that this wasn't reasonably foreseeable, then we don't prevail on this case.
Okay.
There is another case that is pending now before the appellate court where the Forest Service began the scoping process on the Fischel timber sale, immediately east of Eagle River, next door to the Northwest Howell timber sale. And in that case, they had already begun the scoping, while on Northwest Hall they hadn't completed the EIS yet. Two timber sales next to each other, same forest, east of Eagle River, and you'll then have that temporal connection completely there.
But in this case, they hadn't even begun the scoping process yet on the Twin Ghost, had they?
No, they had not. They began it within about a year. Your Honor, the situation here, though, is if you have a NEPA regulation adopted by CEQ that is binding on the Forest Service, and that's the situation here. 40 CFR 1508.7, cumulative impacts, and 40 CFR 1502.22 bind the Forest Service. Reasonably foreseeable future action, by its very terms, means to foresee, to look into the future, to predict. That's what the CEQ guidance says. It means you have to look into the future a little bit. Otherwise, it wouldn't say reasonably foreseeable future action.
But that's what we're really debating. You know, at what level of certainty and at what level of definition does something have to be on the broad spectrum of just a gleam in someone's eyes on the one point to everything but the last piece of construction or the last little bit done on the other end of the spectrum. Somewhere on that spectrum is where this reasonably foreseeable
point
kicks in.
But facts matter on that. So here are some of the facts. First of all, this is the same agency, the Forest Service. It's not the Forest Service looking at a highway project. It's the same National Forest Office. Indeed, the same person at the National Forest, Ms. Cheney, was responsible for the environmental impact statements of both the 20-mile project and the Twin Ghost project.
But facts on the ground matter, I'm sure, for the Forest Service as well. So the types of wood, the types of animals in the habitat, the the way the forest has matured. It seems to me they may not know what they want to do or whether they even need to do anything until they've studied it.
And that's correct. And here we have a timber sale that's right next door.
We don't, well, okay, we, if you're going to say that, that's
no,
what you're going to
there, say. There's no dispute. We know the timber sale is next door. Until about a year, there was a question of whether it would be 10,000 acres or 12,000 or 14,000 acres. But under the forest management plan, with the same forest office and the NEPA coordinator raising the flag, and it be immediately next door, on those facts, it was not just foreseeable, it was foreseen.
But see, here's where your timing issue is troublesome, because you really just actually would rather the Forest Service leave this alone. The ROD here is February 2007, and of course, later events are going to bring more certainty to what they want to do, not only with Twin Ghosts, but what they want to do with any place else that may happen to fall in this forest. But as I understand your position, nothing can be done until everything's done.
No, it isn't, Your Honor. That would take it too far. Our position is as follows. First, reasonably foreseeable means to predict and look ahead and deal with some uncertainty, because otherwise you wouldn't have reasonably foreseeable future action in the standard. It implies they have to look ahead. So there's going to be some looking ahead. Secondly, the Forest Service tended to use a 5-year period as their temporal bounds. That's referenced in the EIS. Third, 40 CFR 1502.22, the CEQ implementing regulations that apply here, make clear what's supposed to happen in these circumstances. It's cited at page 34 of our opening brief. And what that regulation says is when you're looking at reasonably foreseeable actions, or those that might fall within the ambit, it lays out a roadmap for what the Forest Service must do in terms of basically getting the best data that they can and trying to deal with.
When does that analysis apply? When does the cumulative impacts analysis apply in terms of the 20-mile project?
It applies from the very beginning of the 20-mile project as the agency begins to move forward on a project and begins to put together its documents. They need to look at what are the other actions.
Doesn't the regulation that you just cited say that it applies during the scope of an EIS?
So here
that EIS was released in February of 2007?
No, it applies during the scoping of the EIS.
Which would have been prior to
which
that.
Which would have begun in about, I believe, 2005. I'll check the record.
I think it was 04.
It might have been 04. So the scoping began, and while that scoping was going on, under the NEPA regulations, 1508.7 and 1502.22, the Forest Service is required to look to what are the other actions, past, present, and reasonably foreseeable.
And what is it during that 04 through February of 07 period that you're relying on with respect to the Twin Ghost project that made it reasonably foreseeable?
Mr. Quinn, who was their NEPA forest coordinator, the lead official charged with NEPA compliance, we have at least one piece of evidence where he raised a red flag on it.
That's the email you're referring
That's
to.
That's the email.
That says this is likely to potentially
right.
happen.
And there was another one where there was a list of projects, including Twin Ghost.
So what's the other one? Because I thought this email was your only evidence, actually.
As did I.
There is a list of projects, and if we might, I will pull that up and supplement on that.
Was that in the record?
Yes.
Was it submitted to the district court?
Yes, it would have been. Secondly, there was activity going on Twin Ghosts. There was work being done on the ground.
What work? That's what I'm trying to pinpoint. What are you relying on to say that this was reasonably foreseeable?
We're relying upon the affidavit of Ms. Cheney that was submitted to the district court that describe the activities and the flow of activities that were being done on 2005 and going to 2007.
Again, what were those activities that you're relying on? Because I think, as you indicated, this is a factual question.
Yep.
There were some initial surveys done in 05 that you're relying on. The preliminary boundaries of the Twin Ghost Project, though, weren't even decided until late in 07, way after the EIS on the 20-mile project was issued.
That's correct. There was on-the-ground work, and we don't know the full scope of the internal work because we didn't have discovery. I mean, we are at the mercy, if you will, of what information the Forest Service releases. There are things I think I know, but I'd have to go outside the record to tell you that, and I won't do that. But we're at the mercy of the record and the information the Forest Service puts together. But there was clearly activity going on between 2005 or 4 and 2008 that was leading up to the scoping document. And during that time, the
But 2008, the scoping document was issued, the EIS, in February of 07.
That's correct. But during all that time leading up to the scoping document, there was work being done. And during that work, the same official was in charge of both projects. They had to know, therefore, about Twin Ghost. It was next door. They may not have known all the specifics, but therefore, under 1502.22, which we cite at page 34 of our opening brief, NEPA regulations lay out the roadmap for what the agency must do in these circumstances. The Judge Wood do have uncertainty, but with a standard that says reasonably foreseeable future action requires them to engage in looking ahead and predicting and trying to pull it together. Moreover, there wasn't a statutory deadline here. The agency could have modestly moved back the 20-mile EIS. They could have modestly moved up the Twin Ghost Project. What they could not do is what they did: violate the NEPA regulations, as the Eighth Circuit in Mid-States explained, and completely ignore the Twin Ghost EIS in the 20-mile environmental impact statement. They could not completely ignore it. They had to take a hard look. They had to follow 1502.22, which lays out the roadmap. They had to follow the CEQ guidance, which is cited in our brief and explained.
Do you have any authority for your argument that they should have waited on the project until Twin Ghost was closer to being formed?
The authority is both the regulations and the Mid-States opinion, which says they cannot completely ignore it. They had choices. They had options. There were different ways they could have done it. This is not a case. I'm going to try to leave myself a little bit of time, if I could, for rebuttal. This is not a case in which the Forest Service did A, B, C, D, and E, and the appellants are coming in and saying, we don't like what you did on A, we don't think you did enough of B, and you really should have done G, H, and I. This is a case where the Forest Service completely ignored it. That they cannot do. That's impermissible under the applicable NEPA regulations. As a matter of law, they violated those. It's not a matter of agency discretion. It's a matter of the agency didn't do what it's required to do. And the temporal period here and the facts of this case, not some other case down the road where it might have been a different forest official and they could say they were surprised or they didn't know what a different agency was doing, a big timber sale next door, or what they pretty much made a very big timber sale next door with the same forest official, same national forest right next door. That fell within a reasonable meaning of reasonably foreseeable future action. And 1502.22 and the CEQ guidance then lay out the roadmap of what they need to do, and that's cited at length in our brief. For those reasons, we urge you to reverse and remand. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lerner. Ms. Peterson?
May it please the Court. The purpose of NEPA analysis is to inform the agency and the public of the probable or possible environmental impacts of proposed agency actions. And in this case, the Forest Service designed and analyzed the 20-mile project in full compliance with those requirements. The question is whether including some kind of discussion of a yet-to-be-planned project in an area that admittedly is next to the 20-mile project area was necessary in order to provide the statutorily required information, and the Forest Service's position is that it was not.
So, Ms. Peterson, if you had to articulate a standard for where on this spectrum that I outlined a few minutes ago, from the gleam in the eye to all but the last nail in the, you know, building, at what point of development or conceptualization or planning does it become necessary? And, you know, you're writing this court's opinion. You're saying, well, you know, when it's too speculative, no, and when it's very clear but not quite yet finished, yes. But how do we think about this rationally?
In this case, it's clear that the requirement did not come into play because there was no project even there were no project goals until a year
Mr.
after.
Mr. Lerner thinks it's absolutely clear on the other side, so maybe we should avoid the word clear.
The facts are simply to the contrary. The Forest Service began setting goals for a project in the Twin Ghost area 1 year after issuing the ROD for the 20-mile project. That's clearly outside the scope of foreseeable projects. Now, there is some confusion possibly from the fact that the Twin Ghost area of 67,000 acres approximately had the same name, that the ultimate project that was eventually proposed years after the 20-mile ROD was issued had. The project, of course, encompasses only a small fraction of that area. It isn't the same thing at all. So as the affidavit on which Mr. Lerner relies stated, at the time that the 20-mile ROD was issued, it was entirely possible that no project at all would go forward on the Twin Ghost area. The data that's gathered in the pre-planning analysis can lead to unexpected results that suggest that what was thought to be an area in need of some kind of management treatment has various reasons why it is not such an area.
Of course, that's not what this Quinn email on which he relies so heavily. I actually still not sure what that's the theory. But anyway, let's assume we'll do something else. It's got the 15 things listed that he says should be considered reasonably foreseeable when conducting, I don't know what, vegetation management?
Yes, Your Honor.
It's like a vegan or something. And then he says there will likely be two additional EIS proposals initiated under timber pipeline, et cetera. So it's not completely out of contemplation. It's somewhere along the road.
Correct, Your Honor. And that's necessary in the statutory process for forest planning because in the broad-scale planning that the Forest Service does to meet its various obligations under the statutes, it needs to determine where it's likely that management actions and where it's likely that logging will take place over a 10 to 15-year horizon. But what will take place in those areas isn't known until careful on-the-ground analysis has yielded some kind of information to tell the Forest Service what is needed in those areas to bring them into the desired forest condition that's set by the plan.
So when you do a cumulative impact analysis going forward with Twin Ghost, I assume that whatever you've decided to do in 20 Mile could preclude you from doing something.
It certainly could limit. Yes, it could limit the possibilities.
If you've damaged the pine marten habitat too much or if you've damaged other things too much, you might have boxed yourself out of doing something.
Precisely, and that's exactly how the NEPA process works in forest planning. Each project stepwise attempts to implement the goals of the overall forest plan, but each project takes into account all of the impacts, positive and negative, of the preceding and currently planned and ongoing projects.
So how do you answer Mr. Lerner's final remark that if the statute does and the regulations call for consideration of reasonably foreseeable future, they're just not going to be certain if they're in the future, unless we've, you know, got some capability in the Forest Service that the rest of us don't have.
Well, forest planning, each project also has a stepwise process associated with it. And once the Forest Service has set goals and has identified a boundary and the kinds of treatments that are likely to be appropriate management treatments for that area, it has good information about what's foreseeable in the way of impacts or potential impacts. Since obviously,
do you think it needs to reach the draft EIS level? Or is there something concrete, getting back to my first question, we can hang our hat on?
The Forest Service uses a schedule of proposed actions on which each project is placed as scoping. The NEPA scoping process is undertaken. And so that's their guideline for what needs to be considered in a cumulative impacts analysis.
So once it graduates to this schedule, then you start taking it into account?
For any project that is on the schedule of proposed actions at the time of any other project's NEPA analysis should be taken into account in considering the cumulative impact of the project under consideration, assuming that it's possible that there could be cumulative impacts from that project.
How do you differentiate them between reasonably foreseeable and present? If you think it should wait until it goes on the schedule, where's the dividing line?
Well, present actions are actions that have actually been designed and decided. In the course of the NEPA process, the Forest Service looks at the no-action alternative and a range of other alternatives for any particular potential action. And
so if it's on the schedule, it could still be a no-action?
It could still be a no-action, but it is reasonably foreseeable that some action will take place and what kind of action that will be. And so there is the potential for useful information to be considered in the cumulative impacts analysis at that stage. But before that time, when the Forest Service hasn't decided whether it's doing anything, and if it's doing anything, what that would be. Any information that could be included in a cumulative impacts analysis regarding that is not helpful. It is not useful information, either for the public or for the Forest Service, to say we're thinking we might do something in this area nearby.
So it sounds like you're relying on the rule of reason that other courts have adopted?
That's correct, Your Honor. We believe that this court probably should not depart from the rule that's been applied by every other court that's looked at this, which is that a rule of reason and
But, you know, I don't know what that means. Even in antitrust, until we decided that the rule of reason meant that you had to look at market power and some actual measurable benchmarks, was the equivalent of just throwing things into a giant black box. And so, I mean, none of us would deliberately be unreasonable when we evaluate something like this, but I feel as though, you know, maybe what you're saying is you need to have reached a point where perhaps the Forest Service has identified two or three or four potential action alternatives as well as the required no action alternative, so that there can be some concrete discussion of, you know, if we go route A, then there would be this cumulative impact, route B, that, but that it needs to be, you know, crystallized at least to that point, or maybe you mean something else, I'm not sure, but just to call it a rule of reason doesn't tell me very much.
I agree, Your Honor. It's not simply a rule of reason that dictates the time.
To judges, don't be unreasonable.
The Forest Service applies its own rule of reason, and
by which it means what?
By which it means when a project has taken shape, okay, which is ordinarily when scoping occurs.
All right.
So that impacts might be identifiable, and a useful analysis of those impacts might actually yield some kind of information that would inform the decision makers and the public as to the likely impacts from the project under consideration.
Could you describe the scoping process just a little bit more?
Your Honor, I am not expert in the scoping process. What happens is that after the analysis of the ground has yielded both goals and proposed actions, the Forest Service informs the public of its proposal to take an action that has a general identity given that boundary and those actions. So it describes a proposed action and sends that proposal out to the public, and based on information received from the public and the information that led to the scoping notice, it then proceeds to prepare a draft environmental impact statement environmental assessment.
So this isn't a national forest, so I assume the Forest Service has people wandering around in different parts of the forest from time to time, and if somebody comes back and says, you know, all the trees in the Twin Ghost region all appear to be about the same age, and there doesn't seem to be any light getting down to the forest floor or whatever. I mean, somebody must say something, or maybe a member of the public who visits the forest. I don't know. But there needs to be something, I guess. I guess what I thought it was the process of studying an area to see if some affirmative step needed to be taken. But maybe that's wrong.
No. And when you say it, you mean scoping.
Yeah, the scoping process.
Scoping is a NEPA term. And NEPA begins at the time that the project has taken some shape. The pre-planning process, I think, is what you're describing. And that takes place for as long as it takes for the Forest Service to gather all of the scientific and cultural and other information that it needs to determine the circumstances on the ground in the area where it proposes to take an action because of its belief that management action in that area is needed to bring that area closer to the desired forest condition that's set by the forest plan.
What is the difference, if you can tell us, between the activity in the pre-scoping period by the Forest Service and, quote, the scoping period?
I mean, scoping, I believe, and I could be incorrect, Your Honor, is the first involvement of the public in project planning. That's the stage when the public is informed that the Forest Service intends to take action.
I guess my inquiry is this on the ground examination, does that continue during the scoping period, or is it completed when the scoping period starts?
That's a difficult question, Your Honor. First, after all the information needed to design a project is gathered, scoping can begin. But some of that information will yield results that suggest that ongoing monitoring needs to continue. So, yes, it also continues. The pre-planning process involves the gathering of an enormous amount of data, and it only after all of that data has been gathered does the Forest Service set specific goals, design a boundary, select the kinds of management actions that are appropriate.
So is this, so what was happening with the Twin Ghost area while the EIS for 20 Mile was out there, you know, in draft form and public comment and so on? Was that in the pre-planning stage, or was that scoping, or is that at all useful as we try to figure out what a future action is?
There were people on the ground gathering data. Studies were being undertaken.
So this is what you're calling pre-planning.
That's the pre-planning stage, yes, Your Honor. And the scoping notice that first identified a project that might then have particular impacts was issued more than a year and a half after the record of decision was issued for 20 Mile. So all of the time during which 20 Mile was being planned and on beyond it was the time during which specialists on the ground were developing and gathering data. The data then later needed to be analyzed, and plans would then be based on the analysis of that information in relation to the desired forest condition set by the plan. And
was that in November of 2008 that you're referring to?
That is when the scoping notice was issued, yes, Your Honor.
And is that the beginning of the scoping process when the notice is actually issued?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. Scoping is a NEPA term, and scoping brings the public into the planning process.
So I assume that at this pre-planning stage, sometimes a decision might be made to leave well enough alone, and sometimes a decision might be made to move forward into the next stage?
That is correct. As I think it's on in our supplemental appendix at page 2 or 3, the affidavit of Constance Cheney explains that that data, once it's analyzed, might yield the decision not to do anything, and what other kinds of possibilities come into the picture are only developed after that analysis takes place. So the discussion of impacts from an action that hasn't been planned in an area where the analysis hasn't been done doesn't yield useful information for the Forest Service, even if, as Mr. Lerner has argued, it's reasonably foreseeable that logging will be an element in the project. It doesn't tell us that a particular impact is foreseeable or that we should be taking into account a particular impact, because we don't know that there will be anything, let alone any logging, let alone how much or what kind or where. So those kinds of data become useful only after a project is designed and in the pre-design phase. Forest Service does not believe that useful analysis of cumulative impact is possible.
Ms. Peterson, on a different area, have you waived your waiver argument by not developing it below?
We raised it below. We were given 10 pages below in which to explain this complicated question.
You raised it in a footnote, and you didn't really assert it.
That is correct, Your Honor. And if we did not raise the waiver argument and it is not therefore available to dismiss this claim, it's because there was the timing was such that no waiver could take place because there was no claim until well after the Forest Service stopped giving consideration to the 20-mile project. So either they waived any claim in the context of 20-mile, and they did do an extensive critique of the cumulative impacts analysis without suggesting that the Forest Service wasn't looking far enough forward. But even if there is no waiver argument because of the timing here, that is the reason why this case should have, as it was, should correctly have been dismissed on the merits. If the panel has no further questions, thank you very much.
Mr. Lerner?
My time is short, so I'll go to the heart of the matter. Reasonably foreseeable future action must mean something. Counsel said every other court that's addressed this, I'm not sure what she's referring to. The Mid-States Court, 8th Circuit, page 27 of our brief, says that the agency cannot completely ignore. The Fritiofsen case at page 34 and 35 of our brief says reasonable forecasting and speculation is thus implicit in NEPA. And at page 17 of our reply brief, we cite the Forest Service's own environmental impact statement here, where they refer to 5 to 10 years as being too speculative, suggesting that something less than 5 years. That's their language in their environmental impact statement. So 40 CFR 1502.22 is what CEQ and its regulations say must happen here. Faced with incomplete information, the Forest Service has to go out and get the best they can. It lays out the roadmap. We cite that at page 34 of our brief. And the CEQ guidance provides the roadmap as well. What they cannot do is one thing, and that's what they did here, which was to completely ignore it. That's arbitrary and capricious and contrary to law. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Leonard. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.